It's tremendously big and tremendously wet.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 40 of the Ron and Brian podcast. I am Ron, as always, joined by fifth place finisher in the 2010 Nathan's Hot Dog Eating Championships, Brian. Brian, how are we doing today, sir?
I was doing a lot better until you brought up the poor showing that I put out there during the hot dog eating contest. I trained a lot for it.
An area of shame, of pain for you?
Well, you know, I don't. You know a lot about me. You know how I operate. You know the way my brain works, and you know that I'm very goals oriented. I set a goal, and I train. I train. I work. I practice. I practice. I mean, I put so many hot dogs in my mouth for months leading up to it. I mean, I had many cold sores as a result. My sodium levels skyrocketed. I was warned by my practicing physician that this was something that was putting my life in jeopardy, and yet I continued to do it. And I didn't even qualify to make ESPN's coverage that year. And that was the part that broke my heart, because my whole family was watching. You know, right. I said to them, you know, on July 4th, watch, I'm eating hot dogs. And I took a hit that year.
I took a major hit.
And I feel like I owe everybody an apology. And I had almost forgotten until you just brought it up, so I appreciate it, my friend.
Well, there's only one thing to do in a situation like that, Brian, and that is you need to drink your cares away. Some of you may have noticed we didn't have a poll this week for Drink of the Week. That's because Brian is on the road traveling in this great country of ours, so he was limited in his drink ability. So we're doing a very special BYODOTY this week. Bring your own Drink of the Week. Brian, what did you pack on your trip to drink during the podcast this week?
I brought myself a very manly flask filled with Bullet bourbon. As people who have listened to this podcast before, I am a fan of the Bullet, and not just the silver one that I aim at wolves and vampires. No, I'm a fan of Bullet bourbon. That's what I'm drinking. Got a little on a couple dashes over the some ice cubes, and as a chaser, Diet Pepsi, because let's be honest, watching that Super Bowl, I'm a Pepsi drinker.
All right. I broke into the beer fridge because I haven't been down there in a while. Picked out a choice from Golden Road Brewing called Melancart. This is a watermelon wheat ale with honeydew and cantaloupe. Apparently, this is a series inspired by the iconic fruit cart vendors of Los Angeles. So we're just going to pop that one open right there. That is very melony.
It is melony.
It's very melony. It's all right. I taste the individual melons, and there's nothing better than the taste of a melon on your tongue, don't you think?
Well, it depends. You know, last time I was in Thailand, I had to pay quite a bit to have the taste of melons on my tongue. It was not one of my prouder moments in life. And I went back to my practicing physician, and again, he yelled at me not to put hot dogs in my mouth.
Well, we will save that story for another time, perhaps. So again, keep an eye on the Facebook page. We will probably do a Drink of the Week next week. You never know. We kind of mix things up, but keep an eye out for the poll. And if it's there, vote for your preferred drink. Yes, sir. You have a question?
No, but I know we're going to get to Beef of the Week.
Right.
I know we're going to. I would like to, what is the opposite of a beef?
I mean, I guess a praise of the week, perhaps, or?
I would like to do a praise of the week for a, what do they call these things with that you put the ice cubes in? The ice cube bucket.
The ice bucket?
I am, hugely underrated is an ice bucket. I mean, I know it's completely wasteful. You fill it up with ice cubes, and in about 20 minutes, it is just literally just cold water. But I'm going to say there is something that just, it says class, to lift the lid up, grab a handful of ice, hear the ice cubes plopping and plinking at the bottom of your glass as you drop them in. It makes me feel classy. It speaks to my roots.
Clink, clink, clink. You're classy AF. There's no doubt about it.
Praise of the week.
All right. Moving on to This Week in Racism.
This
week
in
racism.
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 After a close matchup last week, it was a little more cut and dried this week. Mark Allen Bartlett ran away with it, defeating racist old woman 75% to 25%. So he is our winner for the week. That's his first win. He is going up against a new challenger this week. We did have a few things to choose from. This was an interesting one that you put up on the Keep, Brian, out in Portland, Oregon, dealing with Sergeant Greg Lewis, who apparently was about to reach a settlement for a comment he made in February 2017 after 17-year-old Quanice Hayes was gunned down by a police officer while unarmed and on his knees surrendering. A few days after that, Lewis commented to someone that, quote, "If they are black, just shoot them." He managed to keep his job for another year, then was fired in February 2018. As always, he hires a lawyer. City attorneys, who were afraid he might win, offered to expunge his firing, give him $100,000 in back pay, and put him down as, quote, retired, so he could collect his pension, something that the all-white city council expected would go through fairly easy. But wait, in November 2018, entered Joanne Hardesty, who became the first black woman to be elected to the Portland City Council. During a January 30th council hearing where the council was expected to okay the settlement, Hardesty waited until it was her turn to speak and then read every officer's accounts of Lewis's comments, meaning that it would forever be officially on the record. Due to the outcry, the mayor delayed a vote on the settlement, and citizens have demanded the release of all the related documents to this case. Going out to Chicago, there was a series of leaked emails from Cubs co-owner Joe Ricketts, engaging in racist subject matter about blacks and Muslims, as well as promoting conspiracy theories about President Barack Obama. He has since apologized, and his son Tom has attempted to distance the baseball franchise from his father. Joe Ricketts was supposed to be one of the people recognized at a night of honors at Creighton University this evening, but he has since been removed from the program. Going down to Florida, since blackface was all the rage this past week, Representative Anthony Sabatini is resisting calls to resign over a resurfaced high school photo showing him wearing blackface. The photo had surfaced prior to his election in 2018, but have come back to light due to the recent blackface scandals in Florida and Virginia. He claims the photo has been, quote, decontextualized, which I'm not even sure that's a word.
What is that? I don't even know what that means.
But our candidate this week, of course, has to be Virginia Governor Ralph Northam. Last week, a picture emerged from his medical school yearbook showing men dressed in blackface and KKK garb. He first admitted and then denied being in the photo, but did admit to wearing blackface for a Michael Jackson costume he wore for a dance competition. He has resisted multiple calls to resign, had one of the more insane press conferences in recent memory, and considering the current administration we're under, that takes a lot. Brian, what was your favorite part of his press conference dealing with the blackface photo?
I would say my favorite part was just his general confusion. It felt like a man who was deeply aware that he was at any moment about to throw his political career out the window. So it felt like he was on edge with every word he was about to say, afraid that it was going to come out the wrong way and take his legacy with him.
My favorite part was when he was talking about the dance contest and doing the moonwalk, and one of the reporters asked him if he could still do the moonwalk, and he looks around Like, he's gauging if there's enough space to moonwalk, and then his wife has to be like, inappropriate setting for this.
Seriously, leave it up to the wife. The wife is always the one that spoils the fun. Ron, have you ever had just a terrible idea that seems like it's going to be a lot of fun to do, and your wife just says to you, Ron, you're not going to be doing that. And you sit there and you realize that she's the voice of reason, and she's you know that it's a terrible mistake you're about to make, so you decide against it. That was an opportunity there for that man to go from black-faced racist to living legend. I believe that had he moonwalked, he would have gone down in history as one of the most I don't want to say laughable, but it would have redeemed him as a human being. He's still a racist piece of garbage that needs to resign his position. But the fact that he had just had the wherewithal to not even realize that it was a terrible idea for him to moonwalk, that this was a legitimate question, that the press wasn't just fucking with him because they believed that they just knew there was a lie that he was moonwalking. There's no way that man had any rhythm to moonwalk. I wish he had done it. The wife just screws up another great embarrassed politician press conference.
So a couple people have come out of the past to comment on this. The first one was the advisor that assisted with putting together the yearbook for the medical school. According to that individual, all of the photos that would appear on each student's page were submitted by the students themselves. So that means that the photo of the one individual in blackface and the other individual in KKK garb had to be submitted to the yearbook by Governor Northam. Apparently they'd be put in a sealed envelope with the student's name written on them. So he's trying to go around saying it's not him in the photo, but it sounds like he had to be the one that submitted the photo. One of his old medical school friends has also come out in support of him, saying, I don't think the governor was one of the two people in that photo, because I remember Halloween from 1984, and I remember him, his costume was a three-piece suit with a briefcase, and because it was just so odd. And it's like, that sounds about as reliable to me as Brett Kavanaugh's old high school calendars that he managed to find as well.
I like beer. But the story is better because it even goes to the point of the governor, Northam. Northrackham.
I liked beer. Northam.
Like beer. He goes so far as to suggest at one point, and it wasn't in the press conference, but it was just during this crazy week of his. And keep in mind, and I don't think we've touched upon it yet, when the yearbook page is leaked, and first off, shame on the Republicans. And you made the point to me earlier in the week, so I'm going to attribute this point to you. This isn't a brilliant idea on my part, but shame on the Republicans that ran up against him, that did not have the wherewithal to say, all right, let's see where this guy went to school and let's go through his yearbooks. This should be standard operating procedure in any political event that's going on in America nowadays. Shame on the political team that managed that Republican's campaign, because they failed him. They failed him wildly.
They didn't need WikiLeaks to break into any servers or anything like that.
Nope.
It literally was in any person's yearbook that attended that medical school for that year.
So the page gets leaked. It's all over the news. And the governor immediately rushes in front of a camera. No, this wasn't a press conference, but he's sitting in front of a camera and immediately apologizes for the photo. So now keep in mind, he's had enough time to look at the photo, study the page, look at the yearbook, and he gets on screen and starts apologizing for his insensitivity. Then, the next day, when he's about to hold his press conference, that's when he says, it wasn't me in that photo, but I think just to prove it, we should do some facial recognition software, apply that to this photo so I can prove that it wasn't me. By the way, I also put some shoe polish on my face to darken it for this dance conference. But never mind. If anybody needs me to moonwalk, just check with the wife and make sure it's okay. But the guy is, his first reaction was to apologize, acknowledge that it was himself, discuss his insensitivity, and move on. Not realizing that, I mean, let's face it, Ron, and this is just a question. If somebody said, Ron, here is a photo of you from high school in blackface that you put in your yearbook. Would you remember whether you had ever stood next to one of your friends dressed up as a KKK member while you were in full blackface?
I believe I would recall that.
I have, in my life, drank too much on many occasions. Not once. And there were times where I woke up not remembering how I got back in bed.
And you were never in blackface?
Never was I in blackface. Good never point. Was I wearing a white robe with a hood over my head.
Good on you.
The fact that somehow this guy, and let's face it, I'm starting to get to the age where these politicians are. These guys used to be like grandfathers to me. Now I'm like, oh, you got a couple years on me. There's no way that you don't remember whether you did this or not.
Yeah. Yeah, there's no way around it. So, you know, again, this has been going on for a week. Literally everyone within Virginia, across the country, is telling this guy to resign. But he is going to hang in there. So he's our candidate for this week in racism. We're going to go a little bit deeper into this. But just as a reminder, you know, go onto the Facebook page. We have the poll up. It'll be Mark Allen Bartlett going for win number two, going up against Virginia Governor Ralph Northam. So as, you know, pressure mounted on the governor over the past week to resign, people started looking at Lieutenant Governor Justin Fairfax, who would obviously take over should the governor resign.
I'm sure he's got no skeletons in the closet, right? So he'd be an upstanding replacement, right?
You would think so. However, he has since his name has popped into the public again, he is now facing a sexual assault allegation from Vanessa Tyson, back from when they were both attending the DNC in Boston in 2004. Fairfax claims their encounter was consensual, while Tyson contends it was consensual kissing, which then led to a sexual assault. So she has retained a lawyer. She is putting her statement together. You know, Fairfax is stating she has every right to have her voice heard, but he is contesting 100% her version of the story.
Now, that's a pretty bad week for Virginia. I mean, I would say that they you know, there's a little egg on Virginia's face, which I always say is the northern of the south. But you know, it's nice to know that that was the end of it.
Now people are calling on Lieutenant Governor Fairfax to potentially resign. So if both the governor and the lieutenant governor resign, after that it would fall to State Attorney General Mark Herring to become governor.
I'm sure Mark Herring has no moments of shame and regret in his political career. I'm sure he's a upstanding member of our society, that he can hold his head up high, be proud of who he is and decisions he's made.
So since his name has been bandied about potentially becoming governor, he admitted this week that he too wore blackface for a costume in college. So now there are calls for all three of these Democrats to resign. If all three do resign, then the Speaker of the Virginia House of Delegates, Republican Kirk Cox, would become governor. No word yet on any embarrassing thing in Cox's past.
I'm sure that'll come up, but if there are any embarrassing things on Cox's part, I believe that next in line is the Republican delegate from Saratoga County, Republican Party, Scott Kingsley.
Yes.
I believe he would be fifth in line for the governor of Virginia, unless they're going to hold against him the Price Chopper customer service desk job that he's had for 18 years. I mean, Maybe they'll hold that against him. I don't know. I don't know.
Hard to say.
I'm sure there's never been a moment where he's dropped the N-word at the customer service desk when the... God damn it. I couldn't do it with a straight face. I was going to say that he's never dropped the N-word when the soda redemption machine broke down and somebody made him count individually each can that they were returning. But I couldn't say it with a straight face. I am so mad at myself right now. Damn it.
That's such an incredibly inside joke, but I enjoy it nonetheless.
Ultimately, Ron, I do this for you.
So anyway, Virginia is a total train wreck. We will be keeping an eye on that over the next week to see how many, if any, of these three resign and who wants to be Virginia's governor. Big question moving forward. Brian, what happened this past Sunday?
We had our beef of the week?
No, we had our Super Bowl live tweeting going on during the big game, which was not really that big a game.
Well, I'm going to say that the game was not big. What was big was that the Ron and Brian podcast took over on Twitter and elevated the game of podcasting history.
Yeah, if we do say so ourselves, we're very humble about that.
Well, I like to set realistic expectations. One thing I learned many years ago: under promise, over deliver.
Good call.
That's what we did on our Twitter page on Sunday.
So there's only one thing to wrap up from this past Sunday. That's to go back and look at the prop bets that you and I made. You got off to a rough start with the results of the Puppy Bowl. You had taken Team Fluff, who ended up going down to defeat to Team Ruff, 59-51. You came back strong with the coin toss, tying it up 1-1. What else did we bet on here? We bet on the first soda commercial of the game, which ended up being Pepsi, which I had picked, putting me up 1. Let's see, what else did we have? We took the bet as to whether Tony Romo or Jim Nance would say Hotlanta. You said no. I said yes. It did not happen. You got that one. We bet on the rating and the viewers with the over-under of national rating at 44.5. I took that over. 44.9 was the final rating, so I won on that one. However, on the total number of viewers, the over-under was 106.5 million. You took the under on that. I've seen two numbers put out there. One was 98.2 million. The other was 100.7 million. Regardless, you won that one, tying it up at 3 apiece, which leads us to the final thing we bet on. It was total number of games LeBron James missed since Christmas of 2018 versus the highest scoring quarter in the Super Bowl. So obviously it was a very low scoring game, 13-3. The highest scoring quarter was 10 points in the fourth quarter. Brian, would you like to guess how many games LeBron James missed with his recent injury?
I'm going to say 8.
All right. And you would hope so, because you took quarter points being more than total LeBron games missed. LeBron missed 17 games. You lose that. I win overall 4-3.
Listen, if there's even a conversation as to who has the ability to predict the future better, if that's what we were talking about, Ron, I would have said right off the bat, you are the person that I look to when it comes to making future predictions.
Well, thank you. You know what we forgot to do? We're flying through topics here. We forgot about Beef of the Week.
Ron and Brian's Beef of the Week.
So, Brian,
can I go first?
Yeah, I would love for you to go first.
I want to go first because my Beef of the Week is something that ties into something you and I were just discussing.
Okay.
And my Beef of the Week for episode number 40 is the current ban in 48 states in the United States of America, the ban on online gambling.
That does suck. I will agree with you on that.
Because one of the things that I did while sitting watching the 7 hours of Super Bowl pregame and got bored and went online was I went on and started looking at all the different proposition bets that Vegas was offering. And there were some crazy ones, you know, similar things to, you know, LeBron's injury and whatnot. But there were ones, you know, coin flip. And I think that I think it's time that we start embracing gambling as a way to attract attention. I think one of the things we are seeing now is that sports, they are starting to, especially in terms of attendance, we are seeing a decline in attendance in all the major sports. I think that the younger generation are starting to prefer the interaction, the give and take of playing a video game and experiencing a video game rather than going to a sporting event and just sitting there for 3 hours. I know someone that recently went overseas and watched a soccer game, or as they like to call it, football. So went to a soccer game where you literally could stroll up to a betting parlor that had windows right next to the concession stands, and you were able to bet on a variety of different bets. I think it's time in America that we embrace gambling. It was a great article in the New York Times Sunday section, obviously timed with the Super Bowl, which basically addressed the, I believe that it was one of the, and I forgot what city it was, son of a gun, check the times. It's on it's one of the major sport owners. He owns multiple franchises in the different sports, and he is one of the biggest backers of embracing gaming in the United States, especially online, et cetera, et cetera. Game changer kind of article opened my eyes that I think it will actually bring in more interest to sporting events. And let's be honest, the gambling is already taking place.
Very true.
It's off the books. It's off the radar. It's in the form of I personally had 5 different bets during the Super Bowl.
With
friends and whatnot.
You know, it was frustrating for me as well because, you know, we recently got sportsbook gambling here in Pennsylvania, and I went on to one of our local casino gambling website because they're like, oh yeah, you can place sports bets on our websites, but you can only place it if you're in New Jersey. So it's like, come on, Pennsylvania, what? let's get this together.
Hold on a second. So if you live in Jersey, because I know Jersey just recently, within the past, I would say, year, legalized sports gambling.
Well, and they just also legalized online gambling as well.
Which is good. So what is it in Pennsylvania that you thought you were going to... What in Pennsylvania do they legalize?
So if you go to a physical casino, you can do sportsbook. You can do betting there. What confused me is Sugar House Casino, which is on the Delaware River in Philadelphia, has their sportsbook open. They were doing a commercial, place your sports bets online, but it was only for New Jersey residents.
Got it. That makes sense now. Yeah.
Brian, I don't want to interrupt Beef of the Week, but I feel like I need to interrupt Beef of the Week because some news has just come across about something we were just talking about. Apparently, you can't make this shit up in America anymore.
What?
Virginia Lieutenant Governor Justin Fairfax has retained the same lawyers as Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh. His accuser, Vanessa Tyson, has hired Dr. Christine Blasey Ford's attorneys.
Oh my God.
So
this is amazing. This is amazing. Do we not learn as a society? It's a perfect example of the Donald Trump world. It's dig in the trenches, never accept defeat, and dig your heels in and stand your ground for as long as possible and hope that people forget and move on.
So it's we'll have to, again, we'll be following this Virginia stuff, but that just came across. I just had to bring that up because that's insane. Well, that makes my beef of the week seem relatively minor in comparison. My beef.
Well, it's not an outrage of the week. It's your beef of the week. It's not supposed to be something of true significance.
Very true. Not having satellite radio in a rental car.
Mm-hmm.
I was traveling again this week, had to drive out to Syracuse. Normally, you know, the car rental place hooks us up. We've got the Sirius XM on there. This one wasn't the case. You know, I had to stream it from my phone the entire time. Maybe that makes me seem like a privileged kind of D-bag. Fine. But I just feel we're in the 21st century now. We need to act like it. And all of our vehicles and technology need to act that way also.
Let me ask you a question,
because sure.
I don't have a Sirius XM. Now, you rent a car, it comes automatically with it, correct?
Nine times out of ten.
Right. Your complaint is that this one did not.
Correct.
Now, when you rent the car, whose account is that? Are they using yours?
My assumption is that the rental car company has the actual subscription.
Now, are there tiers to Sirius XM? Like, do you get, like, with the basic package and a silver and a gold? Or is it just you sign up for it and you get all the channels or you get none?
I mean, there are different tiers available. You know, the rental cars that we get, typically you have all of the channels available.
Because you are white and privileged.
I mean, you could say that.
Okay.
But this time it did not. Thankfully, again, I was able to stream it through my phone, but, you know, it was still kind of an aggravation. So that was my beef, my friend.
You know, I think you're missing out on something that I do have fond memories of, which was when you travel out of your home location and you start going into strange radio environments, listening to local radio. Like, I remember, you know, driving down south or in Virginia, North Carolina, where suddenly every channel is talking about Jesus.
Yes.
And there's nothing but country music. And there's that one pop station that suddenly you're listening to Ariana Grande. And you're like, hey, you know what? This is actually pretty good because you've been listening to a preacher talk for the past 6 hours. And just fooling around, going from station to station, hearing nothing but static and static. And then, and nowadays with the Sirius XM, wherever you are, you've got the same access to the same channels.
Right. It's a great thing being able to drive for, you know, like 4 or 5 straight hours and not have to change the channel if you don't want to.
All right. I can see that. I can see that, you privileged white boy.
Thank you. Thank you. We were talking about our live tweeting from the Super Bowl the other day. One other thing we would like to brag about is we have been blocked by our first individual on Twitter by Steve King, Republican racist senator from Iowa. I hadn't even realized it, to be honest.
Wait a second.
Yes.
You're telling me that Steve King, the guy who got stripped of all of his House committee memberships?
Yes.
He blocked us
on
Twitter?
Us? Well, I assume his social media intern did.
Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. We are blocked from his Twitter account.
Yes. Because
Ron, I'm going to tell you something. I am so proud of you, and I'm pretty sure that it was a tweet. It's because of activity you did on Twitter. I'm so proud of you. This is like watching your son at his first baseball game hitting a single into the outfield, and you're like, that's my boy. All the hours of throwing underhand and watching him swing and miss like a challenged boy.
So actually, I had to go back because we've tweeted at Steve King a few times from our account, and I wasn't quite sure what was the tweet that pushed them over the edge finally. And this was kind of back when the New York Times article came out, when he was like, hey, what's so bad about white nationalism and white supremacy and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And so I just simply tweeted to the senator, you know, hard to believe there are people out there that still don't think you're a racist. So apparently he's a bit of a snowflake. Apparently he was triggered. And he said, you know what? I'm just going to block Ron Brian Podcast on Twitter.
All right. So if you want the kind of entertainment that causes racist Republican congressmen to get triggered, go on to Twitter. Give us a follow at Ron Brian Podcast over on the Twitter page. There's really some exciting things going on there. I feel like you have hit your stride.
I'm like Lance Armstrong back when he had two full testicles.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I'm not saying you could pull Sheryl Crow right now at her prime. I'm not saying that.
Understood.
I'm saying, you know, but you definitely could get the United States Postal Service to give you a couple $1 million.
I'm working on that. I'm trying to shore that up. So check out the Twitter account.
What you do.
We're going to be trying to figure out the next thing we want to live tweet. We had thought about tweeting the State of the Union address that was on the other night, but I don't think either of us had the stomach to watch us. But we did catch a lot of the write-ups afterwards. I mean, it was. I've seen some of the clips. Would you say that we got completely low energy teleprompter Donnie for that entire hour, 20 minutes plus?
I'm going to say that. So I missed the beginning part of it. So I missed the part where he walks in and everybody gets all hushed and there's murmurs in the crowd. I put it on and he, if it was possible for that man to get an erection, he was standing there and it was as if he had a stiff nub the entire time. He couldn't have looked more proud to be standing in that room. There was a smugness to him as he was speaking. My take on what he had to say was, it seemed like whoever had written the speech for him had done a good job of speaking to the core, speaking to his base, and at the same time trying to take credit for the fact that we in America are, as much as we want to bemoan the current state of this country, are actually doing pretty well.
Right.
You know, he was talking about the advances women have made, which I felt was a nice little poke and prod at Nancy sitting behind him. But the fact that it got, you know, the entire House, you know, both sides of the Congress were standing cheering USA. I thought that was the fact that it wasn't a completely divisive speech on his part. I give credit to whomever convinced him that he needed to read a speech as opposed to speak on the top of his head. Thank God the teleprompter worked.
But, there definitely were times that he went, I guess, off script. But,
oh, of course.
You know, the funny thing is, you know, and this is what drives me crazy about the media, is whether it was CNN, MSNBC, Fox News, you know, everybody was talking about how, you know, this was going to be his call for, you know, unity. This is going to be his chance to pivot. Like, there's no, in my mind, there shouldn't be any opportunity for him to pivot away from all the crap that has gone down during these first 2 years. Like, there should just be no, yeah, that shouldn't even be a rhetoric apart from the nonsense that goes on in Fox News.
I think that and I think you and I were chatting about it during the week. I genuinely believe that the left-leaning media still holds some sense of hope that this man is going to wake up one day, come to his senses, and earn their approval. That somehow he's going to wake up and say, you know what? Oh my gosh, all this fear mongering and racism that I've been speaking has you know, it's all been for naught. It's all wrong, and I'm going to be a better person moving forward. I think they still believe that this is going to happen with him, and I find it amazing how naive they continue to be.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, his big goal was unity, and yet he spent, you know, a scheduled lunch with reporters during the day yesterday, you know, insulting John McCain and John McCain's book sales. And then today he spends his time insulting Joe Biden. So why should anyone believe the crap that comes out of his mouth? I mean, the one fact-checking site I read said that he averaged one false or misleading statement every 2 minutes, and he spoke again for over an hour and 20 minutes.
But that's an incredible rate compared to a Donald Trump news conference.
True. Very true.
Like when he announced the that he had signed the agreement with the Democrats to reopen the government, and he started talking about duct tape and coyotes. That was a lie every 30 seconds.
Yes.
So it's a sad state of affairs when a lie every 2 minutes is something to pat him on the back. But it's actually, for based on his track record, actually pretty good. I mean, think about it. Has there ever been a time, and I can't remember it, maybe you do, but can you remember a time where the president of the country stood up and gave a speech and multiple media outlets were already ready to fact check the speech to point out all the different lies that were being strung out?
Yeah, no, you I know, mean, he the has...
Media
he
hated
has...
Reagan. The media hated Reagan. They right. hated George Bush. They salivated at the idea of taking all of them down. Even Clinton, they got to a point where they were looking to drag him down. But at no point did they ever just unabashedly say that we're being lied to by someone so badly as they are with this guy.
Well, he has created an industry of fact checking. You know, there is more fact checking, and thankfully so, because there is so much to check and so much misinformation being put out there. I think my favorite result of the State of the Union is the popularity of the Pelosi clap, when she just gave him the golf clap, like right in his face, like, "Ooh, you're a good boy, Donnie. You managed not to lose your temper for 80 minutes." Like, I have to admit, I was never a huge Nancy Pelosi fan in the past.
I'm still not
a huge fan. But I got to tell you, she has the type of attitude that an individual needs at this point to go up against someone the likes of Donald Trump. Like, she clearly does not give a fuck and is just going to insult him to his face, and it's fantastic.
Well, She's doing something that needed to be done a long time ago, which is hold this man accountable to the words that he says and the actions that he takes. The press is still treating him presidentially, even though he's not behaving presidential.
Yes.
People in his party, the Republicans, seem so afraid to incur his wrath that they will... That instead of contradicting him on things where he's clearly in the wrong, it was a newsworthy event this week when the three of his national security advisors got up in front of Congress and contradicted him in terms of the status of Iran's efforts to fund terrorism, North Korea's attempts to continue their nuclear program. And these are all things that he has unabashedly already figured his opinion. These are facts. North Korea is now a friend that we've already dealt with. Their program, their nuclear program, they're putting to bed. Iran is one of the most dangerous countries around. And the national security advisors actually got up there and said, there is no reason to believe that North Korea is doing anything to stop their nuclear program.
Right.
And everything you read was that it is now commonplace for people that are going to make presentations to him. You are not to contradict anything that goes up against his gut, because he will lash out and rage against you. And for the first time, I think there were two Republican congressmen who actually spoke up against him and said that that as president, he should be listening to the experts when it comes to foreign policy and our national security, and not listen to how he feels.
Right. Agreed. Yeah, he's got to rely on people. He wants to feel that he's the smartest person in the room at all times, and that is a tremendous character flaw. The other thing that seems to get bigger and bigger each year are the State of the Union guests. You know, everybody's looking to make a statement based off of, you know, who they bring to the State of the Union. So, I mean, you look at, you know, Donald Trump, he had Buzz Aldrin. Still not quite sure why. He had
It's because Space Force. Space Force. Oh, that's true.
Yeah, good point. He brought a daughter, granddaughter, and great granddaughter of a couple from Reno, Nevada, who were murdered in their home in January by a undocumented immigrant. To his credit, Grace Celine, who's a 10-year-old cancer survivor from New Jersey, looking to help other children who are fighting cancer. Give him some props for that. But he always has to make it about himself. And he brings in little Joshua Trump, a kid from Wilmington, Delaware, that apparently was bullied because of his last name, so much that he has to be homeschooled for a year. So, I mean, horrible to bully a kid because of his last name, but also horrible for the president just to make it a poor me situation, like, oh, look at this poor kid, but it's really about me because he has my last name.
Well, think about it. He's basically saying, I am so hated out in the world that if somebody sees others with my same last name, they're going to hate on them.
Right.
People will be bullied because I am so hated.
Do you know who our new best frenemy, Steve King, had invited?
No.
Really? I'm a little shocked by that. Do you know who Diamond and Silk are?
Diamond and Silk?
They are
that's a reference I've heard recently.
They are the Trump supporting sisters from North Carolina. A couple of African American women that are very big Trump supporters. They've kind of built some fame online. They've gone viral multiple times with some of their videos. But the problem was he could only have one guest, so he had to flip a coin. Diamond was able to attend. Silk had to stay home and watch it on TV.
Oh. So each member of Congress gets to invite one person?
It varies, I think. I'm not quite sure how it works. It's like Nancy Pelosi invited a ton of people. So it seems like, I don't know if it's a matter of tenure, if it's a matter of, you know, maybe the House gets to invite more people than the Senate does because it's held in the House chambers. I'm not exactly sure how that works. But, you know, everybody was really looking to, you know, get a message across by, you know, who they invited. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez being the rock star still, her guest was one of the women.
Che Guevara?
She had actually invited one of the women who had confronted Jeff Flake in the elevator prior to the vote for Brett Kavanaugh. So that was her guest for the evening. She also wore a pin in memory of one of the children separated at the border that ended up dying in U.S. custody.
Okay.
So definitely, you know, definitely a night for a lot of statements. It is, though, very sad when most of the attendees make a better statement than our president does.
Well, one of the issues I had watching, was it last night or two nights ago?
Was it last night?
Fuck.
I guess it was last night. Yes.
Okay. One of my problems I had with it was the Republican herd mentality of, whenever he would make a good point, they would stand up in unison. And it was almost like they had practiced it all afternoon because they all sat down in unison after clapping for 7 seconds.
Right.
And it's the clapping. It's ludicrous. It needs to stop.
The one part that was very odd to me was the fact that, you know, he pointed out and I guess maybe he was trying to point out the diversity of, you know, the political body now by pointing out how many women were in attendance that are now, you know, senators and representatives and things of that nature. But the weird part of me is, you know, the glaring thing is that 99% of those women in office are Democrats. And the majority of those women got into politics, you know, because of the way Trump has been running the country. So it seemed to be a very weird thing for him to point out during his speech.
I would agree with that.
But, yeah, again, who knows what the hell's going on in his head. Like I said, he thinks he's the smartest guy in the room. He thinks he can take credit for things that he has no control over. But it was, yeah, it was just a big clusterfuck of an evening. And again, the way the media covers it just drives me crazy. And the media seems to be following the same path, you know, with Howard Schultz. Because I just saw that CNN is going to be hosting a town hall in Texas next week with Howard Schultz. So it's like you basically got a non-politician billionaire elected because of all the free airtime you gave him during the election process. Why are you looking to repeat that mistake again, you know, with this guy that, you know, managed to make a cup of coffee and make $1 billion off of it?
I would agree. I mean, it's but not only that, but it's also the fact of why are they picking him versus any of the other candidates that have already announced that they're going to run?
Right.
Why have they picked Harold Schultz over Cory Booker? Why are they not extending the same offer to
Elizabeth Warren,
who's kind of having a rough day?
A little bit.
Kind of having a rough day. It came out in the news yesterday that in one of her. Was it an application? It wasn't a college application, but it was, son of a gun. I know I skimmed the article, which is a little something that I need to stop doing if I'm going to bring it up on podcasts. But she had to apologize because once again, her claim of being Native American is affecting her ability because apparently, where is it? She again used it while, here we go, filling out an application to work at Chuck E. Cheese, Jesus, where they, during the EEOC portion of her job application, Elizabeth Warren checked off that she was Native American. It was actually a form that she filled out in 1986 to become a member of the Texas Bar Association, where when they ask what her ethnicity was, in her own handwriting, she writes American Indian. And this is a woman who, according to her own DNA test that she publicized, is 2% Native American. So kind of horseshit on her part. Personally, I wouldn't be surprised if her presidential campaign is dead in the water.
Yeah, I think she's got some issues. I mean, I would even be interested to see a town hall with Tulsi Gabbard at this point. You know, she has a lot of interesting positions from her past that she says she's kind of grown and moved beyond. So I'd be very interested.
Is this the woman from Hawaii?
Is she from Hawaii? Yes, she is.
I read this week that the Russian state media and different sites that have been used to promote the Russian agenda have already seized upon her as the candidate that they're supporting for president.
That I have read. And also this week, David Duke praised her as well because he said she won't, quote, put Israel first. So always good to get David Duke's racist opinion in there. Almost as good as Steve King.
Yes. I wonder if, okay, here is the Ron and Brian challenge, the Twitter challenge of the week.
All right.
Can we get David Duke to block us?
I think so. I think he probably watches his Twitter feed. So I will work on that, and hopefully next week we'll have another block. We really like pissing people off.
So proud of you. I really am proud. I'm really proud of you.
Gives me a warm feeling all over. Speaking of needing a warm feeling, the inmates at the Metropolitan Detention Center in Brooklyn clearly needed some warmth this past week. That was an absolute total shit show going on over in Brooklyn. Apparently, the MDC had, I mean, and we're still trying to find out what actually happened. There's been a lot of stories coming from the warden, coming from the officers that work there, coming from the Bureau of Prisons. Apparently, either there was a power outage or there was a fire in the power panel.
I heard there was a fire that led to the power outage.
So, basically, for a week,
I spoke to my cousin who's on the inside.
Yeah,
just kidding.
So apparently, for the week, I mean, this place apparently houses roughly 1,600 inmates. You know, was without power and without heat during the polar vortex for an entire week. The thing that's crazy is most of them have in there haven't even been convicted of a crime. The majority of the people in there are in there awaiting trial.
Correct. Well, I mean, the thing is the fact that that's what jails are nowadays. Jails are now the holding centers where you are held until you are found guilty. Then you get sent to prison. Back in the day, before there was such overcrowding, jail was where you were sent if you had committed a minor crime. It was the softer, the weaker criminals, and the serious criminals were sent to prison. Now, because prisons are so overcrowded, jails have literally become just a holding pattern and a holding, I would say a holding cell, but that's a poor choice of words. But it's for people that have been arrested and are too poor to bail themselves out. But let's not talk about that, because it's a whole other
issue. Whole other episode we'll have to do at some point. There ended up being protests outside. You know, people were bringing blankets, you know, sweatshirts, things of that nature, which were refused by the detention center. You know, people that were going in trying to find out information about their loved ones were pepper sprayed by some of the officials there. Incredibly embarrassing. So now there have already been a few lawsuits that have been filed by the ACLU and some other organizations for the treatment of the people detained. There are you know, investigations going on. You know, congressmen are looking into this. I mean, it was ridiculous. And I think what was more, I guess, maybe disheartening for me was seeing some of the commentary online where people were like, well, why is this an issue? If these people have broken the law, you know, who cares about what their treatment is? And that's like, that's a sad indication as to, again, what we've become as a country, is people looking at it. And again, most of these people have not been convicted of a crime. You know, they have been charged, they can't bail themselves out, and, you know, we have a basic level of care that we're supposed to be giving to these people. And then the argument...
I think it also speaks to the mindset of a huge segment of this population, that, at least the American populace, that there is an assumption of guilt, that you got to be guilty of something if you're getting arrested, fuck them.
Yeah. And
innocent people, you know, us free people walking around, we're innocent, we're perfect, we're clear. But, you know, if you're arrested, it's because you're guilty.
Right.
Because, you know, the police never get it wrong. Prosecutors never get it wrong. Police never frame people. I mean, none of these things have ever been found to have happened.
Right.
Innocent people have never been sent away for even convicted of crimes, let alone arrested for them.
Yeah. And the other thing that always seems to pop up is, you know, like people are like, well, we've got so many homeless vets, why do we care about these people? Again, you know, it doesn't have to be mutually exclusive. You know, we have the ability in this country to take care of homeless vets and take care of prisoners. You know, we've got a broken society and we've got a broken criminal justice system. But yet the people who always go towards, oh, why can't we help the homeless veterans? You know, they're the ones that seem to consistently favor the right, consistently favor conservatives, who come up with no solutions as to how to fix things for the average American and for the middle class. You know, at least the one thing you can say for the people that are on the left, you know, the solutions for those, whether it's Democrat, liberal, left wing, whatever you want to call them, the solutions those folks tend to come up with are the ones that err on the side of the people versus what come up with on the right, which, you know, favor the rich or big corporations. I mean, if you're living paycheck to paycheck, you know, if you're paying higher taxes this year, which I got to be honest with you, I'm like frightened to do my tax return this year because I see online everybody is getting fucked over with this new tax.
Yep.
Yes. Or if you're struggling to get by and you're still supporting Trump, you're still supporting the GOP, you really need to take a look at, you know, your belief system. It's insane. And yeah, I'm sure you've seen all the tweets of people like, and people are turning on Trump and the GOP in a big way. They're saying, I got a tax return every single year. This year I paid $2,000 in taxes. You know, or other people saying, I made the same exact amount of money year over year I had to pay this year. You know, we depended on this refund to, you know, put our kid through college, you know, pay off the mortgage, whatever.
somebody has to pay for the tax cut that went through for the wealthy and for the corporations.
Oh, yeah. No, I hear you.
I mean, that money's got to come from somewhere. And I mean, under no circumstances was there ever a dialogue on whether this was good or bad. Everybody just supported the idea of a tax cut. It was, yay, let's have a tax cut. It's good for us. We're going to be happy. Now it's actually starting to affect these people. And it's, oh, no, I'm affected.
Right.
Poor me. It's like, hey, fucker, you voted, you know, like you know, in every poll, you gave a thumbs up that you wanted to lower taxes. You brought this upon yourself.
So you've got a guy giving, you know, giving tax breaks to his buddies, you know, so the top 1% get wealthier. And he's sitting around enjoying executive time 60% of his day.
See, I was going to say, I don't even believe that they're his buddies. I believe they look at him like he's nouveau riche trash. I don't, if you look at like the true one percenters, old money, the money over money, generation after generation, I don't believe that any of these people look at him and say, he's our guy.
So you're saying like Randolph and Mortimer are looking down their nose at him?
Yes. Yes, they would actually look at him and they would say, listen, what do you think about the orange futures? And they would not let him gamble. They would give their money to Reggie. What was his last name? Reggie something.
Drawing a blank, sorry.
Anyway, that's all right. I'm going to go off and just pull a gigantic
It was
salmon.
Billy Ray,
that was. It wasn't Reggie. He played a Reggie in another movie. I don't remember what it was. Because I remember sitting there being like, why does it have to be such like these stereotypical names? But the 80s were an incredible time, and kids today are going to just not remember.
They just miss out on all that.
He wasn't Billy Ray in 48 Hours?
No, he was not.
Are you sure about that?
I'm 100% certain.
All right, well, then I was wrong.
Because all I just remember at the end of the movie when they're yelling back and forth at each other from the beach to the boat, and they're like, looking good, Billy Ray. Feeling good, Lewis.
Yes, you're right. Thank you. It's La Boheme. It's an opera.
Can you help me with my rucksack? Anyway, now we're really just going off on a tangent here.
What else do we have?
If you're getting fucked over on your taxes this year and you supported the GOP, you need to keep that in mind come 2020. Because every projection shows that it will continue to get worse and worse for the middle class the more years this current tax plan is in place. We are not going to see anything about it.
I'd actually like to go on record that Medicare for All is going to drive up your taxes as well.
It will, yes.
I'm not saying that's a solution that we need to just, you know, say is just a great thing and we need to, you know, rally behind it. You know, we need to actually start being fiscally responsible. America is in a gigantic amount of debt. The whole idea of these government shutdowns is because the government cannot agree on funding extensions and approvals to borrow more money for us to run our government. We are the broke kid on the block who owes everybody $20. And instead of acting like the person in real life who just runs away from everyone that they owe, we're sitting there talking about how we're the greatest person on the block because we've got a fancy stereo. I mean, eventually we're going to have to pay the piper.
Right. But I have to say, you know, this. So, if my taxes have to go up each year, I would rather they go up because we're providing health care for every person in the country versus us just putting more money in the pockets of people that have more wealth than they can spend in their entire lifetime. I read a statistic the other day. They were talking about Jeff Bezos and his net worth, and that Jeff Bezos could literally pay to get every homeless person in the country off of the streets, and he would still be worth $100 billion.
Yes, but I give that guy credit, at least. I think he built his wealth. I mean, he wasn't broke at one point. But I mean, no offense, but I don't look at people who, and I'll use Trump as an example or his two sons. I mean, these are people that were born with money. So, you know, they're not a product of wealth creation, you know, the people that they are. They literally, like, were born into a big pile of cash, and they've been surrounded by it forever. They don't know what it's like to struggle. They don't know what it's like to actually add, you know, a value to this world. They're just simply born into a wealthy position and enjoying the spoils of it.
Well, I think Bezos have to is a say guy about that, Don Jr., Eric, and Tiffany. They may have been born into money, but I don't think they were born with a full set of chromosomes. I think we covered all our topics we had jotted down here.
I think we're good.
So thanks, everybody, again, for tuning in. Go to the Facebook page. Go to the Twitter, the Instagram. Follow us, as always. Listen, rate, review, share us with your friends. And we will be back again next year. Anything else before we head out, Brian?
I'd like to be back before next year.
All right. Next year, did I say next week?
You said next year.
Well, we'll be back next week. We'll be back definitely next week.
There we go.
All right. Have a good week, everybody.